Greetings, one and all, and welcome to Sabbath Services. Little accompaniment there. In exactly 3 weeks from tonight, if all the elements are in place, we will be observing the Passover Memorial. We all want to be watching for the new moon, which will be scheduled to be March 21st, next Sunday. And this would, of course, be the all-important Abib moon, the one that establishes the beginning of Yahweh's year. The Passover is the first great observance of Yahweh's sacred year. It's the memorial of deliverance. If you think about anything that characterizes this time, it's deliverance. For us, deliverance from the death penalty that each of us has earned through our sins and the payment by the blood of Yahshua. It's an appropriate, I think, at this time, 3 weeks before the Passover, to review the history of how this all came about, the lessons gleaned, and the important instruction that Yahweh has for his people. You know, the weekly or the monthly church communion that many of us grew up in, doing and so forth, simply are counterfeit spin-offs of the Passover. And they've been Grecianized and changed and so much that it's completely separated from the root what this taking of an emblem is all about. Let's go back and review the framework and the circumstances surrounding the establishment of Passover. We turn to Exodus, the book of Exodus. You know, Exodus is a Greek word that means to come out. It doesn't really have a title in the manuscripts. It's really a continuation of Genesis. Think about it and you look at it. We have Genesis ending with Joseph's body being put in a coffin in Egypt. And the next thing we read in Exodus 1:1, we read of a review of the 12 tribes of Israel and a new Egyptian king who decides to make the Israelites living there slaves to keep them under subjection because they were getting too many and too strong. Yahweh heard the people's groanings under slavery and he sends Moses, a man Moshe, to deliver them to their own land, to give them a new purpose in life than just serving a pagan king and his people. Well, it was interesting that the timing was perfect. We read the fourth chapter of Exodus, and I want to continue with the fifth chapter. And we find here, afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus says Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, let my people go." And the next phrase is so key and so important and so lost in church teachings today, but he says, "Let my people go that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." A feast in the wilderness. Well, Pharaoh has a reaction, you might say, to all this. He says, first of all, "Who is Yahweh?" And you know, when people don't understand Yahweh's feasts, they don't understand Yahweh. You tell them they're going to keep a feast and they want to know why. That's not the one I serve. He doesn't require that. But Yahweh, the true mighty one, does require that. And so Pharaoh questions, "Who is this?" And he says, "That I should obey his voice to let Israel go. I know not Yahweh, neither will I let Israel go." And they said, "Yahweh, the Elohim of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us go, we pray, 3 days' journey into the desert, and sacrifice unto Yahweh our Elohim, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword." So there are consequences to disobedience. Well, this man is naturally angry that they wanted to take his slaves away. I mean, he had a good thing going there. A lot of people, you know, 2.5 million, maybe 3 million people there working for him day and night making bricks. He's upset that they want to worship one he doesn't even understand. And many people react the same way. Maybe you've had a boss in the past. You want to take off for a feast. Gets upset. Doesn't want you to go. Reacts maybe the same way. Who is Yahweh? Why are you doing this? You know, I had a vice principal one time who reacted that way. Gave him a note saying, "I want to take off for the feast." And he made a snide remark. Didn't understand. So he retaliates against Israel, against Moses and Aaron. And what did he do? I made them work harder. Took away their straw. Now you got to go out and get your own straw and make your bricks. So they had their supply cut off, and they had to go out then and make more. Verse 17, but he said, you are idle, you are idle. Therefore, you say, let us go and do sacrifice to Yahweh. Go therefore now and work, for there shall no straw be given you. You shall deliver the same amount of bricks, and yet you still have to get your own straw. I want you to keep your quota up. You're standing around. Get busy. This nonsense that you want to leave here is making me angry, and I want you to get back to work. So Yahweh confers with Moses again in chapter 6. And I want to read verse 1. Yahweh said unto Moses, now shall you see what I will do to Pharaoh. With a strong hand shall he let them go, and with a strong hand shall he drive them out of his land. Imagine Moses was kind of surprised and wondered how all this is going to take place. And Elohim spake unto Moses and said unto him, I am Yahweh. And I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name El Shaddai, but by my name Yahweh was I not known to them. What does it mean by known? It means, in the Hebrew, it means was not perceived or understood. I hadn't really done anything for them. They didn't understand who I was and what I could do. It's not that they didn't know his name. People bring that up a lot. It's not what it was saying. So anyway, he says, and I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan and the land of their pilgrimage wherein they were strangers. So he says, I have a plan. I'm going to make these people my own, and I'm going to give them their own territory. They can become their own nation, both, you know, physically on this earth and as a people. And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. His covenant that he made with Abraham, remember? Therefore I say unto the children of Israel, I am Yahweh, he says, and notice this, 7 promises. Number 1, I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. Promise number 1. Number 2, I will rid you out of their bondage. You will no longer be slaves. 3, I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. 4, I will take you to me for a people. And 5, will be to you an Elohim. And you shall know that I am Yahweh your Elohim, which brings you out from the burdens of the Egyptians. 6, I will bring you in unto the land concerning that which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And 7, the final promise here, and I will give it you for an heritage. I am Yahweh. And that is the very reason right now we have the problems in the Middle East. Another people says, that's my land. Moses spake so unto the children of Israel, but they hearken not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and for cruel bondage. They were under duress. They didn't want to even think about it or care about it. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. And Moses spake before Yahweh, saying, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me? Who am I? Or who am of uncircumcised lips? It won't do much good to talk to him if even your people won't listen, he says. And Yahweh spoke unto Moses, verse 13, and Aaron, and gave them a charge unto the children of Israel and unto the Pharaoh king of Egypt to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. So he goes back and he's going to explain to him the particulars that Yahweh wants done at this point. Now in chapter 7, we have the beginning of the plagues. Moses said that Pharaoh won't listen, and Yahweh says, tell him anyway, and you're right, he won't listen. So we're going to have to do a little arm twisting here in no uncertain terms, to say the least. I'm going to unleash a little devastation on his kingdom, see if that makes a difference. So here goes 80-year-old Moses and his 83-year-old brother to approach the king of one of the most powerful nations on earth and to tell them he must release his entire slave workforce, his prized workforce, who's making bricks for monuments to himself, you know, making him glorious and above all nations on earth. And you thought you had a bad day. Well, here we go in chapter 7, verse 9. When Pharaoh shall speak unto you, saying, show me a miracle for you, then you shall say unto Aaron, take your rod and cast it before Pharaoh, and it shall become a serpent. And Moses and Aaron went in unto Pharaoh, and they did so as Yahweh had commanded. And Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a snake. Why? Why did Yahweh do this? Interesting that he would do this with his rod. In Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 16, let's look here real quick. Deuteronomy 29:16 is a key to this and to some of the other things that they did here. It says, for you know how we have dwelt in the land of Egypt and how we came through the nations which you passed by. And you have seen their abominations and their idols. Notice, wood and stone, silver and gold which were among them. These were the idols, the abominations that they worshipped. So it's rather appropriate that all of a sudden, Yahweh says, take a piece of wood, throw it down, and I'll make a serpent out of it. You know, the Egyptians were great at serpent worship. You know, the snakes, you see them on their headdress and all that. They were into that. So what does Yahweh do? He creates a live idol in mockery against what they were doing in worship of their false deities. Notice verse 19. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, he said, say unto Aaron, take your rod and stretch out your hand upon the waters of Egypt, upon their streams and upon their rivers and upon their ponds and upon all their pools of water, that they may become blood, and that there may be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone. Again, wood and stone is part of their worship. First miracle was against the Egyptian gods of wood and stone. And now, the god of the river, the god of waters, Hopi, the god of the Nile. Turn to Exodus 12:12. He says, for I'll pass through the land of Egypt this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt will I execute judgment. I am Yahweh. Many people don't realize that these plagues that were leashed upon Egypt were each one directed against one of their idols, one of their gods that they were worshiping. Yahweh said, I'm going to do this to show who I am. So we don't know who Yahweh is. Well, I'll show you who I am and show you that your gods, your idols are nothing. So that's what he did. And the magicians, back to Exodus 7 now, the magicians of, verse 22, of Egypt did so with their enchantments. Interesting that they reproduced not only make their rod turn into a serpent, and also the water into blood. But we know that Aaron's rod ate up their rods as serpents. And they could probably go out, you know, into a little dig in the ground there, make a little puddle of water and turn that to blood somehow, however they did it. But we do find that they could perform the first three miracles here. The serpents, the bloody water, and we'll find the frogs. But that's as far as they could go. They couldn't go beyond that. Yahweh had complete control. So here we go. In verse 23, Pharaoh turned in and went into his house, and neither did he set his heart to this also. And all the Egyptians digged round about the river for water to drink, for they could not drink of the water of the river. And 7 days were fulfilled after Yahweh had smitten the river. Chapter 8, verse 1, Yahweh spake unto Moses, go unto Pharaoh and say unto him, thus says Yahweh, let my people go that they may serve me. And if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite all the borders with frogs. Frogs. Heka was the deity in Egypt. They worshipped as a symbol of fertility. You know, frogs can reproduce. They're all over the place. This last rain we saw here, there were frogs jumping all over the roads. Did you notice that? Driving down. I hate to run over them, but they're all over the place. But they, once they get out, they start multiplying. And this is what was happening here in great numbers. Yahweh had a plague of frogs. Frogs everywhere. You get up, you step on them, you go to bed, they're all over your bed. They jump into your glass of water, if you're not, you know, if you find some water. And it says, the rivers shall bring forth frogs abundantly, verse 3, which shall go up and come into your house, into your bedchamber, into your bed, into the house of your servants, and upon your people, and unto your ovens, and into your kneading troughs, into your bread. Everything is frogs. Ugh. You know, Yahweh has a sense of humor, as a matter of fact, to do this, these people. They worship these things. Yahweh says, okay, have at it, have them. You know, here they are. Just wallow in it. And that's what they did. So the frogs came upon both you and your servant, and your people, and upon your servants. And Yahweh spoke unto Moses and to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your rod over the streams, over the rivers, and over the ponds, and cause frogs to come up upon the land of Egypt. So he did. Magicians, verse 7, did so with their enchantments and brought up frogs upon the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron, said, entreat Yahweh that he may take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go, that they may do their sacrifice unto Yahweh. He's a liar. We know that. He didn't hold his word. And after a little while, when the frogs are gone, he says, I changed my mind. You're not going anywhere. So that's what they did. They gathered, verse 14, when the frogs stopped, they died, and they gathered them together, and they got a whole land stunk by these things that these people worshipped because of their dead bodies. And verse 15, when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, there's no more frogs, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them as Yahweh had said he would. And Yahweh said unto Moses, say unto Aaron, stretch out your rod and smite the dust of the land. Notice the first three plagues Aaron does, the last Moses does, is significant. But anyway, that it may become lice throughout all the land. Lice was the Geb, earth god, Geb. So they make this dust become lice. And that's what the next plague was all about. You know, it seems like the greater display of power. Now, the Egyptians, the magicians, couldn't do this one. They tried to do it. They couldn't do it, verse 18. They couldn't make the lice appear. It would seem to me a greater display of power is make all these things disappear. What they were trying to do is just duplicate what Yahweh had already done. But it seems to me if they could take them all away, that would be something. But they couldn't even come close to doing that. So here they are. Verse 19, then the magician said unto Pharaoh, this is the finger of Yahweh. We find that same phrase in Luke 11:20, the finger of Yahweh, showing exactly who he is and identifying him as the true mighty one. Well, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he hearkened not unto them as Yahweh had said he wouldn't do. And Yahweh said unto Moses, verse 20 of Exodus 8, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh when he comes forth to the water, and saying to him, thus says Yahweh, let my people go, that they may serve me. And else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies. Beelzebub, Baalzebub, the god of the flies that they also worshipped. The companion has a note. It says, this plague was a severe blow to all idolatrous worship and worshippers. Cleanliness was imperative. For this cause, the priests wore linen and shaved daily. Moreover, it was designed to destroy the worship of the god of the flies and to manifest his impotence. You know, the scarab beetle, you always think of Egypt and their idolatry, and you see that scarab, same thing. It was part of that worship. And so, they've got flies everywhere, swarms of flies, all over the ground, everywhere. And I will sever, he says, in that day, the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there. Israel had to suffer the first three plagues, but now they're protected. And that has great significance for us. We also have to suffer the sins of this world until ultimately Yahweh will protect his people as well. But we have to go through some trials as well and testing of our own resolve to follow Yahweh and our dedication to him. They also, one source said that they would, this is probably in chapter 9. Well, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let's go on to the next plague here. Next plague in verse 3 of chapter 9. Behold, the hand of Yahweh is upon the cattle, which is in the field, upon the horses, upon the asses, upon the camels, and the oxen, upon the sheep, and there shall be very grievous murrain. That's pestilence, disease, their own mad cow, for all the animals that were in Egypt. Hathor was the cow god. Kunim, it should be, the ram god they also worship. So here Yahweh is focusing his attention now on another deity. And you look at how this came about. The verse 8, Yahweh said unto Moses and unto Aaron, take you handfuls of ashes of the furnace and let Moses sprinkle it toward the heaven in the sight of Pharaoh. And it shall become small dust in all the land of Egypt. Now we have another one, a boil, dust. How could that be directed against an Egyptian god? Well, the god was Typhon, and he was the priesthood god. And apparently what he had done is he had gone, this furnace was actually an altar of some type that the Egyptians would use, that take the dust, the ashes from it, and use it in their worship, probably trying to cleanse the earth of all these plagues. So Yahweh turns it around and makes this dust become very unwanted and causing boils breaking out on people wherever it touched, man or beast, throughout all the land of Egypt. So they took the ashes of the furnace, verse 10, and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses sprinkled it up toward heaven and became a boil breaking forth with blains upon man and beast, and the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boil. So they even had to retreat and go scrape their boils, whatever they did, like Job did. For the boil was upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians. Now it says, and Yahweh hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and that's not really what the Hebrew says. The Hebrew says he allowed his heart to be hardened. Yahweh didn't, people say, well, the Pharaoh didn't have any choice. Yahweh hardened his heart. He had to say no. No, that's really not what it says. He allowed this man's heart, his true person, to come out and say, no, I'm not going to let the people go. And so Yahweh in verse 13 says, rise up early in the morning, stand before Pharaoh, and say unto him, thus says Yahweh, Elohim of the Egyptians, let my people go, that they may serve me. For I will at this time send all my plagues upon your heart and upon your servants and upon your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. For now I'll stretch out my hand, that I may smite you and your people with pestilence, and you shall be cut off from the earth. And in very deed, for this cause have I raised thee up, for to show in you my power, and that my name shall be declared throughout all the earth. Here Moses was showing who Yahweh was by these miracles. Verse 18, behold, tomorrow about this time I will cause it to rain a grievous hail, such as not been in Egypt since the foundation thereof, even until now. Notice two interesting things. Let's turn to Revelation 16:2. We have all these plagues against pagan deities. And we find in the end days, Revelation 16, when the seven vials are poured out, Yahweh, verse 2, and he says, go your ways, pour out the vials of the wrath of Elohim upon the earth. Verse 2, and the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had not the mark, would had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image. That's the boils we see in the sixth plague coming back again at the end of the age. So we have boils, and then in chapter 9 of Exodus, we find that there's going to be hail. Look at verse 21 of 16. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, 80 to 100 pounds. That's pretty big hailstone, you know. Would come right through this ceiling, no problem at all. And men blasphemed Elohim because of the plague of the hail, for the plague was exceeding great. It's an understatement, isn't it? So here we have a couple of similar plagues going to be unleashed on this earth at the end times. So the people now had to deal with hail. It was against Isis and Osiris, the crop deities, because we find out that the crops are going to be knocked down to the, pummeled into the ground. Notice in verse 30, "But as for you and your servants, I know that you will not fear Yahweh Elohim." Notice 31, "And the flax and the barley was smitten, for the barley was in the ear and the flax was bold. But the wheat and the rye were not smitten, for they were not grown up." They were still grass, you know, short grass, as we see now, this time of year. So this is one indication we know that Abib, the time of the Exodus, Passover time, was a time when the flax and the barley were in the ear and could be destroyed by a bunch of hail. But the wheat, which comes later, was not to that stage yet, so it wasn't harmed. I want to go back here now to chapter 9. And I want to look at verse 12 real quick. Yahweh said, "Harden the heart." Again, we showed how it was Pharaoh himself who wouldn't give. "And he hearkened not unto them as Yahweh had spoken unto Moses." So, you know, this man who was convinced that he was going to hold on to his regime and wasn't going to let anything happen, turned against Yahweh and kept hardening his heart and lying, saying he wouldn't let Israel go, but then he would let them go, but then he wouldn't let them go. And it goes on and on. You know, a good benevolent ruler looks after his people. This man had himself at the center of his universe. And he was not going to let anything happen to this empire that he was establishing for himself. He was going to take all advantage for himself, kind of like old Saddam there, building a dozen billion-dollar palaces while his people live in poverty. And we have the same thing historically here when a despot takes over and rules in such a fashion. So Yahweh says, all right, we're going to have a little hail here against another Egyptian mighty one. Chapter 10, Yahweh said to Moses, "Go in unto Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, and that I might show you these signs before him, that you may tell in the ears of your son and of your son's son what things I have wrought in Egypt and my signs which I have done among them, that you may know that I am Yahweh." You know, we sometimes just think of Yahweh as someone up there, you know, hearing our prayers, not realizing how awesome and powerful he really is and what he can do and what he promises he will do as history continues on toward the end. Chapter 10 and verse 3, "Moses and Aaron came unto Pharaoh and said unto him, Thus says Yahweh Elohim of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go that they may serve me." He would not humble himself. How many people will not humble themselves before Almighty Yahweh and turn from their ways? Chapter 10, verse 4, "Else if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow, well, I will bring the locusts." This is Serapis, the beetle-type bug. We find the same thing in Revelation 9, 3-4, another plague. Similar plague that's going to be unleashed on this earth. "And they shall cover the face of the earth, that one cannot be able to see the earth." Now that's thick. That's thick bugs. You can't even see the ground because they're just everywhere. "And they shall eat the residue of that which is escaped, which remained unto you from the hail." So anything that the hail didn't get, the bugs were going to just consume to the ground. And every tree which grows for you out of the field, and they shall fill your house and the houses of all your servants and the houses of all the Egyptians, which neither your fathers nor your fathers' fathers have seen since the day that they were upon the earth unto this day. And he turned himself and went out from Pharaoh. Well, Pharaoh's bracing for the second. A huge onslaught of these things are going to crawl all over. So, here in verse 9, and Moses said, we will go with our young and with our old and with our sons and with our daughters, with our flocks, with our herds. We will go, for we must hold a feast unto Yahweh. And he said unto them, let Yahweh be so with you as I will let you go before your little ones. Look to it, for evil is before you. Not so. Go now, you that are men, and serve Yahweh, for you that you desire. And they were driven from Pharaoh's presence. He said, well, just the men can go. And Yahweh said unto Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, even all that the hails left. So he did that, and the locusts went up out of the land and went everywhere throughout the whole country. So Moses in 16 calls for Moses, or Pharaoh calls for Moses and Aaron in haste and says, I have sinned against Yahweh your Elohim and against you. Now therefore forgive, I pray you, my sin only this once, and I entreat Yahweh your Elohim that he may take away from me this death only. So he goes out from Pharaoh, and Yahweh turned a mighty strong west wind, which took away the locusts and cast them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the coasts of Egypt. All right. So, chapter 10, verse 20. But Yahweh again hardened Pharaoh's heart, or he allowed Pharaoh to continue on his ways, basically. He says, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land. Ra-Amon was the sun deity. That's a famous sun deity that we find out through all of history was worshipped by people everywhere. It's kind of a common thing from the Babylonian mother religion. And so Yahweh says, I'll smite that deity with darkness. Same thing we find Revelation 6:12, when there's going to be darkness on the earth in the latter days. So Moses stretched forth his hand toward heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. And they could not see one another, neither rose any from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. Pharaoh called Moses and said, go ye, serve Yahweh, only let your flocks and your herds be stayed. Let your little ones also go with you. Moses said, you must give us also sacrifices and burnt offerings, that we may sacrifice unto Yahweh or Elohim. Our cattle also shall go with us. There shall not an hoof be left behind, for thereof must we take to serve Yahweh or Elohim, and we know not with what we must serve Yahweh until we come thither. Compromise. Well, just go part of you, but leave your animals. No doubt thinking, well, they'll come back. You know, they'll have to survive. They'll come back and get them. Always thinking, always scheming. That's the heart of man. But Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. So he says, no deal. Pharaoh said unto them, get thee from me. Take heed to yourself, see my face no more, for in that day you see my face, you shall die. And Moses said, you have spoken well. I will see your face again no more. Ultimatum. That's it. Seems like we're at a stalemate now. Now what? This guy will not relent. Won't let him go, tries to work out deals. Moses says, no way, and we've got a standoff. Chapter 11, Yahweh said unto Moses, yet will I bring one more plague upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterwards, he will let you go. When he shall let you go, he shall surely thrust you out, hence altogether. Not only is he going to let you go, but he's going to push you out. He's going to, you know, go, get out of here. I don't want you here anymore. Because we know that the final plague was the death of the Egyptian firstborn. Chapter 11, verse 5. All the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sits on his throne, even the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of beasts, even the animals firstborn, would die. There shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there was none like it, nor shall be any more. Imagine the thousands, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of deaths of people, animals, everything through this thing. You know, it's just amazing. I don't know if you saw in those bombings that took place in Spain, but there's millions of people out on the road and out on the streets, just masses of people. And I got to thinking, you know, that was certainly not the reaction in this country when, you know, 10 times that many people died in the terrorist attack. But over here in Spain, we have all these people just coming out and just, you know, protesting against this attack. Well, I'm not sure about this Pharaoh fellow. I don't know if this would have done it, if it not affected him. I kind of think not. You know, he's kind of like these despots. It doesn't matter what happens to his people as long as he's okay. But when it hit his own family, that was the last straw. And that basically is the lesson of this time, this Passover that we're dealing with here, that it's going to cause a death of something very close, someone very close, to change hearts. And this is what happened here with this man. And so the ultimate result was he let Israel go to hold a feast to Yahweh in the wilderness. Chapter 12. And Yahweh spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. This Abib, someone asked me last week, well, I thought it was Nisan. It's not a Japanese automobile. It's just, that is a Babylonian term that they attach to it. It's actually the beginning of months of Abib. And so Yahweh says that this will be the beginning of all the months of the year. Speak ye unto the congregation of Israel, saying, In the tenth day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for a house. If the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor go together. And according to the number of the souls, every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Notice it starts off in verse 3 as a lamb. Take a lamb, just a generalized lamb. Then we find in verse 4, he shall make account for the lamb. Verse 5, it becomes your lamb. It becomes more and more dear to you as we progress down through this account. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year, and you shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats. And you shall keep it up until the 14th of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. Because this was the command that they were to do then, to take the lamb and slay it. As when he brought them out of Egypt and into the wilderness, this is what they were to do to release them. And so this is the beginning of months and the beginning of the Moedim, the special appointed times. And this is what Yahweh has done through his appointed times, a release, a deliverance. And it starts out with the Passover. Israel was to kill it, to take the blood, strike it on the two posts of the side of the door and the upper post, and therein they shall eat it. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor sodden at all with water, but roast with fire, his head with his legs, and all the impertinences thereof. We'll certainly go through this again when we get into the actual Passover service. But suffice to say, in verse 12, I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the mighty ones of Egypt. As we read, I will execute judgments. I am Yahweh. And he says, the blood will be a token upon your houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. It is interesting that these other plagues that the Egyptians had to suffer, the Israelites didn't have to suffer, but they didn't have to do anything, did they? There was nothing that, they just didn't come upon them, all those other plagues, the last seven plagues. But this one, they had to do something special. This is the ultimate plague. This is the one they had to put the blood on to be covered by the blood. And of course, the ramifications there are tremendous for us through Yahshua's sacrifice and what his blood did for us. Many people have the idea that Yahshua's plan of redemption was finished when he was impaled on Passover Day. His death, they believe, marked the end of the old Jewish system, including the laws of the Old Testament and the virtual end of Israel as the chosen of Yahweh. It just stopped right there, and then we go into a whole new era. And they firmly believe that Yahshua's death on the tree, followed by his resurrection, marked the beginning of what they call the Christian era. Along with that, of course, they have a new Bible. They have a New Testament now they follow that's in effect today. And this has given rise to what we've seen the last 2,000 years of derailment from the truth. In fact, Yahshua, as the Passover lamb, held the key role in a continuation of Yahweh's design. The Passover is the first of the observances and represents the starting point of the rest of Yahweh's plan, not the complete scrapping of it. Yahweh had a plan. He had a plan to bring Israel into a unique relationship with him, to be above all nations on the earth. But Israel wouldn't have anything of it. They didn't want to be obedient, so Yahweh says, all right, others can also have a part of my plan through the blood of Yahshua. So when you look at the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread that follows, we see a progression, not an ending, of a salvation plan that was established way back at creation. Yahweh had this in mind all the way back. You know, even in the sacrifice of Cain and Abel, when Cain brought of the fruit of the ground, but Abel brought an animal. Some believe this is in keeping with the idea of the Passover animal sacrifice. Whether it was something they understood back then, we aren't given any information about. But Yahweh's plan is the same from beginning through to the end. And when an Egyptian firstborn died, Yahweh sent a clear message to all mankind. You see, it was the firstborn that had twice the family inheritance. Inheritance. Salvation. You see the idea coming through. If anyone in Israel had not done exactly as Yahweh had commanded, perhaps maybe just putting the blood on the side and not the top, they would have faced the same consequences the Egyptians did, losing the firstborn. Yahweh had to see the blood. He had to see it. Exodus 12:23. I want to read this. And this has great significance for us in being covered by the blood of Yahshua. 12:23, for Yahweh will pass through the land to smite the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, Yahweh will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come in unto your houses to smite you. You shall observe this thing for an ordinance to you and to your sons forever. Forever. This is Moses instructing the elders on what they're to do. And so that's why we observe this time. And at this time, we make special preparations. We consider our lives and what Yahshua did. We certainly don't want to walk over his blood and impale him all over again. So we consider how we are to be his people and consider what Yahshua had done for us. Looking back in history, we see that Yahweh began a calling of his people at Passover to come out of the world of sin, Egypt representing sin. Pharaoh himself may be a representation of the evil one, not allowing Yahweh to continue his plan through his people, but holding the people back. He does the same today in the New Covenant when we observe Passover. It's an annual reminder that we are, hopefully, Yahweh's elect. And just as Israel was enslaved in Egypt because they refused to obey, we can be enslaved in this world because we refuse to obey. Passover was a chance to rededicate. In Exodus chapter 12, and I want to continue to look at verse 19. I think we need to expound upon this a moment, because it's important that we realize the ramifications. 7 days there shall be no leaven found in your homes. For whosoever eats that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. You shall eat nothing leavened in all your habitations. You shall eat unleavened bread. A lot of people say, well, I'm just not going to eat bread. We can't just not eat bread. We have to eat unleavened bread as well. We remove one, we take in the other. And that's part of the command here in the feast that follows the Passover. And Yahweh says, if you don't, you'd be cut off. I want to look at, we have a little bit of time, I want to look at some particulars here. Some people, if you were to ask them, what is leavening? Probably, I'm just guessing, 25% might get it right. They'd probably say yeast, and that would be the right answer. Probably more women than men, because women, you know, spend the time in the kitchen that men don't. Most who know would probably answer yeast, but yeast, you know, is only one substance, one type of leaven that we're to refrain from. It's also, there's cream of tartar, there's baking soda, there's baking powder, and calcium phosphate. Anything that, any chemical that causes a grain to puff up, that's leavening. And of course, what it pictures is very important, and that's important in the scriptures as a lesson for us. It symbolizes, we find Yahshua talking about that, the leaven of the Pharisees and the scribes and so forth. It symbolizes hypocrisy, it symbolizes false teachings, and it symbolizes wickedness. Some say sin. Yes, well, sin is implicit in it, but it's more than that, it's broader than that. When leaven is removed, these evils that it represents are symbolically taken away as well. There's a lesson in the physical that we're to learn in the spiritual. Let's turn to Titus chapter 1, or chapter 2. Titus chapter 2 and verse 14 says, speaking of Yahshua, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. This verse is speaking directly of Yahshua's sacrifice at Passover and what it does to renew our dedication to him. You know, if you're not seen as peculiar, you know, if you're seen as just another person in our culture, then you're not standing out. Your faith is not being expressed. If you're not seen as peculiar by the world, then you need to reassess your walk. You know, Yahweh's people should be a light, something different. Have you ever noticed that some people, you know something special about them, and they kind of stand out, and you don't even have to really know them that well. And that's what Yahweh wants his people to be, a people that stand out, follow the truth. They don't do the things the world does, but they follow a different way. And as this world sinks further into its sins, the more light should be shined by his people. We need to be much different, far more contrast with the world than even, you know, maybe 50 years ago. If the masses don't like a certain stand that the church takes on a moral issue, the church changes. That's not what Yahweh wants to happen. He wants a standard to be set. There's more to leavening, more to the Passover that we could discuss. I want to look at, just think about this. We were in grade school, you know, we learned how physical changes can result from simplistic things like water changing to ice or steam. And then there are the chemical changes that actually change the nature of the substance. Leavening induces a chemical change. And a chemical change is more like a spiritual change. In the nature of the thing itself is altered. And that's what Yahweh wants. When we remove the leavening, a spiritual change should take place in us. And not just something we do as because we've done it you know, all our lives, or it's a traditional thing to do. We take in the unleavened bread. A change should also be occurring within. The lesson of the feast that follows the Passover is to make us aware that these are influences that we need to guard against from the world that can change us if we're not aware of the hypocrisy, the wickedness, and the falsity. To be unaware of the leaven is to be unaware of what the adversary can do that can destroy us. You know, you can't be constantly bombarded every day by trash and not expect to get some of it on you and not to be influenced by it. And that is what we see in our society today. An unending stream of this is coming day in and day out, being force-fed into millions of homes today through the media and through entertainment. Each of these is a medium that pushes the limits and breaks down the barriers of decency and right. We know that as Yahweh's people, we follow a different way, a different truth. The truth. The love of many has indeed waxed cold, and this is a generation that wanders through life looking for nothing more than wealth and excitement, wealth and entertainment. You talk to people, they say, oh, I can't wait for the weekend. I'm going to have a lot of fun. You know, I'm going to go out and do this and that. And that's what they live for. They live for the weekend. They live for fun and excitement. This is our world that we live in, kind of like in the days of Noah, you know. Eating and drinking, marrying and giving marriage, not knowing, oblivious to everything that's happening and to the trends and to the constant march of history and prophecy that's about to take place. They have no idea. They're just there to get what they can out of life. Let's turn to Romans 1:28. Who are we as a society? Are we to be what I've just described? Romans 1:28. Even as they did not like to retain Yahweh in their knowledge. They want to, you know, you can talk about anything, it seems, in today's world. You know, they accept anything and everything, except you talk about Yahweh. They don't like to retain Him in their knowledge. And there's an instant reaction to that. Yahweh gave them over to a reprobate mind, depraved, unfit to pass judgment, can't pass right judgment, gets everything perverted. To do those things which are not convenient, not fitting, not appropriate, being filled with all unrighteousness, then he lists them all, who knowing the judgment in verse 32 of Elohim, that they which commit sins are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. They applaud it. They're excited by it, and they relish it because that's what they want to be. That's what they want to do. And when nobody stands up against it, they feel comfortable and continue on doing it. Yahweh says, here's the way, walk in it. This is the message of his feasts. This is the message of Passover, to come out of the world, to separate, become a different people. Come out and keep a feast to me in the wilderness. They couldn't keep it. Pharaoh said, hey, you know, just go a little ways. You know, don't go too far. That way I can go grab you and bring you back. Just go a little ways out. You know, compromise. No, he says, Yahweh says, keep a feast in the wilderness. Go 3 days' journey. That wasn't what he wanted to hear. Pharaoh didn't want that. But that's the ways of man, the thinking of man. They just want to, you know, well, let's adjust it a little bit. Let's change it a little bit. Let's make it more compatible with the way I want to be. That's man. The Passover was a night when Yahweh executed judgment on a false religion, a false worship, and sin itself. And so, lest we think that this is just an ancient judgment on an ancient people, we need to think again. Those same kinds of judgments are waiting this world, and they're going to be unleashed again, as we saw. Many of the same pestilences and, you know, the earthquakes and the darkness and all of this is going to happen again. The hail is going to happen again. History is not renewed. It's a continuum. And it may be that the feast will offer protection. When Yahweh says, I'll take you on the wings of an eagle into the wilderness, could be at this time that Yahweh is going to take his people who are being observant to his feast and protect them because they were obedient. There's so much meaning in what Yahweh has for us. And we need to keep in mind that this Passover and the feasts that follow through the rest of the year all are part of a plan that Yahweh has established. When we observe them, we become in line with Him and His will. When we fight them, we become little pharaohs who want to do it our way and have it our way and rebel and end, ultimately, in death. And that's certainly none of us wants to see. May Yahweh bless you.
Thank you for that message. You can all rise. I'll call Brother Jose for the closing prayer. Brother Jose.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Mighty Father, for bringing us once again to another Sabbath day where we can be instructed in your word, and for reminding us of what Yahshua did, and for reminding us of your power and how you execute judgment on the deities of this world, and how you constantly remind us not to be involved in the worldly issues and not to be unequally yoked with worldly people who don't care at all about you or Yahshua or the plan of salvation that you have for us. So we thank you, Mighty Father Yahweh, for all these things that you bring to our remembrance through your Spirit. We thank you for setting us apart through this sign that you give us this Sabbath day. We pray for all your people all around the world who share in the same struggle and those that are being afflicted. Pray that you heal them, be there Yahweh Rapha. And we just pray that you keep us safe this afternoon. Bless the food, bless the fellowship. May we come back again and do it again next Sabbath. And may we prepare ourselves, Yahweh, to renew our covenant that we made with Yahshua and also with you. We thank you for all your blessings and for your rebuke and your instruction. And all this we ask in Yahshua Messiah. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
I always like how Brother Jose